Hello and welcome to PharmaLex Talks podcast. My name is Jim Nichols and I'm delighted to be speaking with Gerardo Gomez about the interactions between validation and technology transfer, considering the views and expectations of the regulators at a special point. As Gerardo will explain, technology transfer is really a very sophisticated and complex project management activity and therefore needs to be carefully planned to avoid discrepancies or deviations from the regulations. Gerardo is a director here at PharmaLex of QMC USA and is a CQV subject matter expert at PharmaLex. He has more than 25 years of experience in the pharmaceutical and biotech industries and has held technical and leadership roles in the areas of validations, technical transfer, operations, and regulatory compliance at major biopharmaceutical companies. He has a PhD in pharmaceutical sciences from the University of Michigan after graduating magna cum laude from the Chemical Engineering Department at the University of Puerto Rico. Welcome, Gerardo, and thank you for taking time to speak to our audience about this complex intersection.
Thank you very much for the introduction, Jim. I'm happy to share my experience and knowledge of validation and tech transfer.
That's great. Could you perhaps help our audience understand where technology transfer and validation intersect?
Sure. So it helps to think of these two topics as two interconnected circles, where the tech transfer is the larger circle and the validation is the smaller circle, sort of Venn diagrams. The smaller circle would be embedded in the tech transfer. Now, it can also be totally outside the tech transfer. For example, you could validate without doing any tech transfer just because of an equipment change, for example. But whenever there is a new product transfer or a technology transfer, you go through your change control, and one of the requirements will be some level of validation, at least some. It could be installation qualification, operational qualification, or IQOQ. It could be IQOQ-PQ, where PQ is performance qualification. And it could be full process performance qualification, or PPQ. Just as an explanation, IQ, OQ, and PQ are sequential activities that manufacturers carry out to validate their manufacturing processes.
So beyond the importance of planning to avoid discrepancies, are there specific challenges that companies need to be aware of?
Yes. The first type of validation that can become a challenge is the analytical method. Even at clinical stage two, as early as that, you're already talking about validating your analytical methods. This one really goes into the science of developing your product, what you are seeing with a new entity, and developing stability indicating methods. If you're transferring one method from one site to another, are you just transferring it versus validating it? Those sorts of discussions take a long time to agree and develop, after which the rest of your qualification starts.
Good. So let's get into what the regulators expect at a high level before we delve into different expectations across the various regulatory authorities.
So Jim, almost every regulatory will have validation as a requirement, if not all of them across the world. And validation is really about proving repeatability, that your process, your methods, equipment, and so on, comply with the way they were designed and the expected output. The regulations really require this to be well documented. The regulators will ask the timelines, the dates, what are your expected submission dates, but not necessarily your overall project timeline. But they will, of course, follow your agreed upon submission timelines, and they will check your procedures for tech transfer. Do you have a procedure? And does that take into account all the elements of the transfer, including validation and risk analysis? To avoid delays, you will definitely have to use risk management to assess or prove all the elements of high risk or medium risk, depending on your procedure.
Thanks, Gerardo. That's very helpful. I'm wondering if you could talk about if and how validation requirements vary with the stage of the product lifecycle and the type of dosage form.
This one is where the various regulatory authorities differ. Generally speaking, validation starts when you're into the commercial phase. But there are two exceptions. The first is analytical method validation, which is expected to start in your later clinical stages, so earlier earlier compared to the commercial stage. The second exception, from a process standpoint this time, is that because you're already putting quality systems in before your commercial stages and during your commercial stages, there is an expectation that you start to assess intra-batch variability and show some sort of repeatability of results. So it's sort of taking a glance at your future PPQ. Some regulators enforce that more than others. So the FDA, for example, really takes a more holistic view around validation, and they call that process validation. They see everything, literally everything, even the early development work, as part of your overall process validation. That terminology is used in the traditional way by other regulatory bodies. For example, EMA refers to process validation as PPQ. So there are some differences in terms of nomenclature and emphasis. However, they are essentially aligned for most of the expectations and requirements. One final point, maybe during the late clinical stages, there are validation requirements around dosage forms, and particularly, and this is a point I wanted to stress, around sterile dosage forms. The EMA, through the recently revisited revised Annex 1, it's explicit about validation requirements for sterile dosage forms, something to keep highly in mind.
So when it comes to advice from the regulators, can companies discuss validation strategies with the FDA, for example, during their formal CMC meetings?
Yes, they can. Yes, they can. There are a series of very well-designed time points along the CMC journey in which you're allowed to coordinate a Type B meeting with the FDA. And indeed, there's a guidance on the FDA website for that. At the end of each major stage, there's a checkpoint where you have the option to check in with the agency. And we recommend our clients to make good use of that option. Now, you may not necessarily get a clear yes or no from the regulators, but you can certainly get their perspective. For example, if you're doing a certain matrix approach for your PPQ runs, because you have many strengths or more than one final presentation with seemingly minor variations, we would strongly recommend that you seek that feedback from the agency. Of course, the first thing the agency will say is, do your risk analysis. Is that not a necessarily straight answer? They will be looking for you to do a proper quality risk analysis, show knowledge of your critical quality attributes and critical process parameters, CQAs, CPPs, and then from that, present your proposal for consideration. In other words, full understanding of ICH Q8 and Q9.
I think that's really good advice, Gerardo, and thank you for that. Since we've brought up risk analysis, could you also describe the interaction between the validations and other quality systems, such as quality risk management, investigations with CAPAs, and change controls?
Sure, Jim. Let's start with validation and quality risk management, which is embedded in the validation lifecycle. You start with the validation master plan, and followed by the user requirement specifications, URS, your design documents, then your IQ, OQ, PQ, et cetera. Early in that validation V model lifecycle, you are requested to conduct a risk analysis to your equipment and to your process to understand what you need to test. If the attributes have no product impact, then you don't necessarily need to test that. But on the other hand, if they have an impact on your product, you are required to test. So you conduct that risk analysis in order to design your actual testing. Like I said, risk management is part of the validation lifecycle following, say, investigations CAPAs system. That's another quality system. That one is expected depending on where you are within the validation lifecycle. If you are in the early stages or, for example, in commissioning stages, it is generally not expected that you document this in your investigation CAPA system, in your central plant sites. At that point, you typically use this as a more informal oversight. Having said that, because you're tied to a validation master plan, you are expected to describe that. And we encourage our clients to introduce the elements of good investigations. So if something unexpected happened during that early stages, think of the root cause of what really caused this and how to avoid it happening again. Again, this doesn't need to be done in a formal way. When you're in the IQOQ, PQ stages, that's when the more formal oversight begins. Once you're in the PQ, and certainly in the PPQ phase, the full validation stage, any unexpected result or anything that deviates from your validation plan or your validation results, your acceptance criteria, there is an expectation that it should be documented in your official investigation Kappa quality system.
That's very insightful, Gerardo, and I appreciate that. Now, could you perhaps offer some high-level advice for companies on how to stay in compliance with tech transfer and validation requirements?
Sure, Jim. So the first important to do is to take a holistic view of your quality system. While validation is not defined as a quality system per se, it can be viewed as a quality system in the same way that a vendor management program would be. If your phase two results are going in the right direction, you should start to review your quality systems. Do you have your quality systems and your validation systems in place? Make sure your procedures address the A to Z of process validation. They can be modified as the company matures, but it's important that you have a fundamental procedure or policy documented and that you really connect that with the rest of your quality system. Taking a holistic view of tech transfer and validation in the early stages is a good way to help you stay in compliance. While it's important to stay on top of the regulations, you should also understand best industry practices in the validation world and the tech transfer world, as opposed to other quality systems. So in contrast with that, there's a lot of information outside the regulations for the specific cases of validations and tech transfer. For example, information from professional organizations like PDA, Parenteral Drug Association, the International Society for Pharmaceutical Engineering, or ISPE, and standards like ASTM. These examples that I mentioned are tried and true and trusted organizations, and following their advice can help you to develop good processes.
Well, Gerardo, I have to say thank you again for this very valuable advice for companies on the interactions between validation and technology transfer. And I want to also thank our listeners. I hope you take some valuable information from this episode and apply it in one way or another to your business. PharmaLex, now part of Cencora, serves the pharma, biotech, and medtech industries, guiding our clients through the entire product lifecycle, from early strategic planning, non-clinical and clinical, regulatory submission processes, and post-approval activities. Please make sure to subscribe so that you can join us for future podcasts. And thank you all again.